WildTalkRadio.com.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Pac with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
It's Sunday night, and you know what that means. It's time for another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio, wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTR Live Chat. If you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's not Prime Gaming, it's not Twitch Prime, just Prime. Click the purple button below the screen. Support the channel for free. You can use creator code Rocket Sock and 49 Shop when you buy your brand new battle passes that apparently feature John Wick, but comic book style, because we've all read the John Wick comic books, right? Hashtag epic burner. I am the producer, joined as always by the intern.
Ole, 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 ole. Oh, sorry, I thought I was in the crowd at Clash.
Backlash?
Well, Clash, they were doing it too.
You said Backlash, though.
No, I said at Clash.
Oh, it sounded like Backlash.
No, at Clash.
Clash.
I need to enunciate more, apparently.
Yes, yes, you do.
I'm just not one of the live stands that was there pre and post show.
You just know that you're a live hater.
I'm not. She seemed either drunk or on something during the pre show. She was out of it.
You're just a live hater. At Kane Kittens, all you live stands. We also have one, Keishi Matsunaga.
Yes, at Clash.
At Clash. There you go. See, he did not say his words.
I will make sure during the rest of this show to say at Clash.
Elongate your vowels, Brent.
Working on it.
There you go. And we also have, hopefully, the one and only Tim Stein.
Hi, guys. How are you?
You're loud. We're just going to turn you down a little
bit. He lives!
That one.
Okay.
There we go.
Is that better?
There we go. That's a good volume.
I just want to let Keishi know that the arc is almost ready.
Well, that's good.
Keishi will understand what I'm talking about, of course.
He said it was raining. He informed us it was raining.
Yeah, it's been raining since last night. So, and it's not going to stop till Wednesday.
What's rain?
Water falling from the sky.
Roman's rain?
Roman rains.
You know,
We don't get that here.
He does. He's actually reigning. Yeah. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of WTR Sunday Night Roast Talk Radio live right here on the World Talk Radio Network, streaming on Twitch TV, twitch.tv/WTR live. Come and join us. We've got a chat room. I'm about to enter that site as we speak. My stuff was just powering up as Rock was checking to see if everything was working. So
we tried to see if everything was working, and there was no communication on Tim's end. So we're here to talk about WWE Clash in Italy, which took place earlier today. It did. It had a very loud crowd.
Oh, they were really into the show today. That's for darn sure.
This is why international crowds are fun sometimes, because they just let loose. We saw it in France. We saw it in Puerto Rico. It's been fun.
It has. And the show kicked off with the undisputed WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, taking on Gunther.
This was the most entertaining Cody Rhodes match I've seen in like a year, I swear to God.
Yeah, it was really well done.
I swear to God. Like, we know Gunther delivers, like, chops. Well, holy God, some of the ones he hit in this match were just ridiculous. And Cody sold them well. Like, he got hit with one, and it looked like he got hit by a truck.
Yeah. So I'm almost certain that he probably made sure they tell Gunther to, like, really hit him.
Lay it in there a little bit on me. It's okay.
Yeah.
Make some noise.
He seems like that kind of guy.
I liked the psychology of Gunther, too, where, like, you have the typical heel at some points where they kind of they're kind of oblivious of what's going on. So, like, Cody goes for the ropes, and it's just like, I wonder what's going to happen. Uh-oh, here comes the Cody cutter. Bam! Gunther sees him, goes for the ropes, and he's instantly like, all right, hang on, chop's going to go right here. And the announce crew really drove that home, where they're like, he studies tape. It's like, yes, he does. But it shows him as kind of like that calculating heel, which is nice to see, because normally, as we talked about, there's kind of the dumb heel and face where it's like, I hear music hitting and I'm gonna stop whatever I'm doing and turn towards the entranceway to see what happens, not continue beating on the person like I was doing very well.
Yeah I don't mind how the match ended either. I thought it was well done.
Yeah. There was controversy, though.
Which I think kind of feeds into what was nice about it. Sort of like it kind of didn't make either guy look bad. You get Cody retain his title pretty much. I mean, it was not convoluted or janky in a way of like interference or, you know, like the referee can't see anything, a ref bump, or somehow a turnbuckle got ripped off and then they didn't see it happening, or they just happened to be in that corner at the end. It was a finisher and a pin, quote unquote, cleanly. But then you've got Gunther being, you know, living up to that ring general moniker of being like, oh, I'm close to the edge of the ring. I'm going to stick my foot under the rope and break the pin. Unfortunately, the ref didn't see it and he got pinned. So you could sell that in multiple ways of like, well, I was out, but I had enough energy to do this. So I knew that the pin was going to get broken, thus theoretically giving me more time to get some energy to kick out properly. But then all of a sudden, well, wait, what's going on? Why is it counting? It should stop. And then right at the last second goes, oh, what is this? The ropes. You missed it. So it's nice that there was like a definitive finish to the match, but something on the end to kind of carry this on if they want to circle back to it, or, you know, keep Gunther looking like, I mean, while he did theoretically lose, there's kind of an asterisk there. So it doesn't sort of take away a lot of his momentum where he's been beating up all these guys and retiring people.
I'll address the chat really quick. The finish wasn't an anticlimactic. It's literally the ref's job to check positions during a pin. Yes and no. The ref is supposed to check the shoulders, make sure those are down. I don't think he's going to do a full 360 around to be like, wait, are the ropes, you know, are they under the ropes? Is it this? Is it that? So I understand the idea of like the ref could have seen it, but at the same time, from where the ref was positioned, you're not going to see the right leg if it's fully under the rope. The one problem I had with the pin is I wish Cody had pulled him up a little earlier, pulled that leg up a little earlier, because it was like one, two, and then like right at three, he kind of yanks back and it moves the leg away. I wish it was just a little bit sooner. personally.
You're not supposed to, though, but you're supposed to not start the count if the leg was underneath the ropes. Was his leg under the ropes when the first count hit?
That's the thing there. No, watching it, his leg moved under the rope after the count started, meaning the referee's sight lines were firmly on the shoulders, not looking at everything else that was going around in the split second that he has to make sure things are on the up and up.
So if that's the case, the referee did his job properly. Usually the referee would, it, by eyesight, see a rope bounce, is why they want it on the rope rather than on the underneath the rope.
Under the rope. Yeah.
You can see it. It protects Gunther, kind of, because he has a way out. Cody addressed it, said, let's go again.
I'll fight you anywhere, anytime.
So he's acknowledged the referee's mishap and will be a fighting champion on it. So that gets you to another match, whether it would be a Night of Champions, whether it be on a SmackDown, wherever it may happen. It wasn't the greatest finish, but it was hard to believe they would have had Gunther lose completely clean, though.
Yeah.
Especially with the way that they built him up, yeah.
So you kind of booked yourself into a spot where you had to figure out something creatively to kind of get out of it at this stage.
Yeah, the biggest complaint that I've come across on social media this afternoon, this evening, was that the match wasn't long enough.
Oh, my goodness. Back to this.
Yeah, back to that.
They fit two matches on the pre-show, or they fit two matches on ESPN, and they're not long enough. Got it.
I was going to say, they made the, you guys talked about how you were most interested in a Cody match, because they cut out like the 5 minutes of rest holds and stalling they would do in the match. They kept going.
Yeah.
So that made the match better. I don't know what the internet wants.
The internet doesn't know what the internet wants.
The internet wants 14 mass versus mass matches.
Yeah, there's no pleasing the Gen Z wrestling fan. Forget it.
No pleasing any wrestling fan at this stage. Let's be real.
They want Takeshka versus Okada every day for the next year.
Well, I must be in the minority. I thought the match was perfectly, exceedingly entertaining, very well done, fast-paced, and it didn't feel short, didn't feel long, but it didn't feel short to me.
I'm surprised they did that finish on the first hour on ESPN. Does that type of finish get casuals who may be watching for the first time to continue watching? Yes, because they all watch basketball and football and baseball and hockey, where officiating sucks.
I mean, that is very fair. Is the foot in or out? Hey, Rock, what is a catch? Did they drag that second foot all the way to the line while controlling the ball?
Was that a flagrant foul? Was that just a regular foul? Was his foot on the line, off the line? And
you know what, Rock? I got it. I know what we can do. We can put in the baseball strike system for the referee.
I was thinking the tennis one.
I was going to say, you're allowed one challenge per match, and you can, if a referee missed a call, you can go up to the Titantron, see what happens, and what's the penalty if they get it wrong, though?
Automatic loss.
They have to start their next match in a submission.
All right, you start off in the figure four, okay?
No. So yeah, Cody Rhodes still your champion for SmackDown as your undisputed WWE champion. How long that lasts, who knows? The other match that was on ESPN was the WWE Women's Championship. Rhea Ripley, Jade Cargill.
Now, when I'm say what I'm about to say, I don't want people taking it the wrong way because it's not the typical thing, but throughout the entire match, Jade Cargill was suffering a wardrobe malfunction. Any of you guys know what I'm talking about?
No, I did not notice.
I did not pay attention to that.
Every time she moved, she lost some spangles off that uniform. And by the end of the match, it looked like there was metallic confetti all over the mat.
That happens. I mean, Lyra Valkyria was wrestling at one point and feathers were all over the ring. So,
yeah,
it happens.
The only problem is at some point it was a bit distracting, and it went through my head that this is turning into an impromptu tack match if those things were hard plastic, fake jewels.
They could have kicked them all into a pile and she could have done jaded on top of them.
There you go. There was only one miscue / flub in this match that was any kind of really obvious. other than the screw up with Jade getting her leg on the rope with an assist that yes. didn't exactly go the way it should have gone.
That had more to do with the assist than Jade, though.
Jade, you know, she didn't get her leg over soon enough, and then you saw that she moved it over, so it could be lifted. That was the only hiccup, really. But that being said, another entertaining match.
Yeah,
this one was quite enjoyable.
I'm going to turn this over to Keishi to describe what this match was in a slight twist of what he normally would call it. Keishi?
It was two big, meaty, beautiful women smacking meat.
There we go.
That just sounded worse than normal.
Sorry, two Keishi. Very physical women beating the hell out of each other.
Oh, man, yeah. And like Jade is continuing to improve all the time, and it's really nice to see. She's clearly doing something in that company to put work in to kind of polish herself up. But yeah, like just constant improvement from Jade. And I mean, yep. I'm sure a lot of that probably had to do with the fact that she's wrestling Rhea Ripley. but you still can't take away that she also, like, you can see the improvement in her. And so, like, we'll eventually, I think, if she keeps working the way she does, we will eventually get to a point, I think, where we go, oh, X person had a good match and they're constantly improving. And you can see that. And a lot of that had to do with her working with Jade.
Yeah, I think Rhea presents Jade with an opportunity where I think Jade really does like to wrestle physical.
Yes.
She likes to really drive that athleticism home. And Rhea is someone kind of like we talked about in the first match, where I think she kind of went to Jade and was like, if you want to lay that kick in, lay it. Like, really put something into it.
Yeah, because I don't think that, I don't think Rhea would have phrased it, if you want to. I think Rhea would have said, don't hold back, give it to me.
Well, because, like, that pump kick that Jade does looks more vicious when she's delivering it to, like, Rhea Ripley, or someone who will ragdoll sell it well. So someone, I think, like a Chelsea Green, where if that pump kick comes, Chelsea knows I'm going to, you know, play dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got a nice physical match between them, and we got a continuation of the story that we've seen on SmackDown the past couple of weeks, because we know Jay didn't come alone. He had her baddies with her. Rhea didn't come alone either, we found out.
Hey, Charlotte. Nice to see you.
And it's something that I really like about this is that we're so used to Charlotte being Charlotte. And it's the idea of, like, normally she wouldn't be in this role, like coming to help Rhea out or, you know, putting herself in harm's way. It would be more like Charlotte takes the opportunity to take someone, you know, like take an opponent out. But in this case, it was like, no, I'm here to help Rhea and to stick it to the people who hurt my tag partner.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Is it wrong that I had it in the back of my head that after Rhea won, Charlotte would go to give her congratulations and then sucker her?
No, because that's the history. That's the history of Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that in the back of my mind for a minute. Oh, here's where the turn comes.
But if you've been watching the Charlotte character, not where she's headed mindset-wise.
They've done a really good job at, I'm trying to think of the best way to put this, not career rehabilitation, but
character,
like,
character rehabilitation.
Yes, thank you. It's that thing, like, we're so used to seeing Charlotte in that way that it's like, now they're putting that mindset in of like, oh, maybe she's not going to.
Yeah. Well, and I think that kind of feeds more into, like I say, like the character rehabilitation and sort of the change in character that we've seen of Charlotte. She's gone from, like, basically just like being that, like, I have to be poised. I have to act like the queen. I have to be the greatest women's wrestler ever. And now she's kind of like, the wrestling itself hasn't changed, but the personality of her being like, oh, maybe if I show these fans a little bit more of, like, who I am and not play the part of the quote-unquote queen, like, and I think it's working for her. And, I mean, there's no guarantee that that is who she is outside of wrestling, but I feel like she's kind of throwing a little bit more of, like, herself into the character, and I think it's helping.
I would, you're seeing more of guess the way to put it, Ashley coming out in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it helps with the fact of like the gear and, you know, the stories behind how things are being created with her, you know, the fact of like, oh, her gear is made up of all the friendship bracelets that this fan gave her. And, or, you know, like it was designed by this fan with special needs. And it's like, she goes immediately to them in the front row. And it really kind of makes you draw that connection of like, okay, it humanizes her more, where I think we can all agree, like for the first bit of her career, it was basically, oh, Charlotte Flair, daughter of Rick, going for world championships. That's her entire persona put into a T. Like, she's just Rick's girl who's winning championships left and right. Okay, got it. Which now we're getting like a person.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's a bit of a flip from what you normally see with wrestlers. It's like they come out and they try to identify with the fans and this and that, and then they switch it around and all of a sudden they're just like hyper focused on doing nothing but being the best wrestler and not worrying about the fans. And then eventually some of them come back around to it. But it's interesting how Charlotte kind of started out being like, there's nothing more important than being the best women's wrestler in this company. And I mean, maybe that has something to do with, well, she can look at it as, well, I mean, I've done everything I want to do, but it's kind of lonely.
Yeah. Well, and I think some of it from a psychology standpoint also comes from like, if you're raised by Ric Flair, who is, you know, before Cena, the person that held the most championships. And then, you know, all of a sudden a couple more championships got added to Ric Flair. Surprise, surprise. But it's like, if you grew up in the environment of, like, I am Ric Flair's daughter, and the style and profile and all of that, it makes sense from a psychological standpoint of, like, yes, when she enters, she's going to have that mentality as well. Which is what they encapsulated with her. Like, okay, yeah, she's genetically gifted, but she also had the mentality of Ric Flair. And now I think you're starting to see that little bit of separation where maybe it's like she realizes, like you said, she's won a bunch of championships. She knows that she's kind of cemented there, but maybe there's more to life than just winning championships and being that way. Maybe it's a little lonely and you kind of need, you realize you may need people as opposed to the Seth Rollins and early Charlotte Flair treatment of, I'm going to have people around until they're no longer useful to me. And I think we're seeing that a little bit more with Seth nowadays of like, I've burned a lot of bridges and now I need a little help and no one's there until, you know, Dawkins gets roughed up. And then all of a sudden Montez Ford looks at him and goes, all right, we have the same enemy. I guess we can do this.
Very true. So Rhea Ripley still the WWE Women's Champion. All right, let's talk about it. Oba, Brock, go.
This was probably one of the most talked about, if not anticipated, matches on the card today. And the huge speculation I think that we had was, how could they give Oba Femi the loss without hurting him? Well, they showed us how.
I guess.
Brock took advantage of Oba Femi taking his eyes off of him long enough. And that was all that was needed. The guy takes 7 F5s. After the 3 count, he still stands up. This is not over yet.
I get that. You brought up a point that was probably my biggest qualm for this match. 7 F5s. We talked about it at the last PLE.
Yeah.
When it came to the Tongan death grip. I get that Oba Femi is a freak of nature, but Brock felt like Roman Reigns in WWE 2K25, where you had the special bar completely filled up, and all you're doing is spamming finish. I know that you're trying to make Oba look strong. I know you're still, you know, you're trying to get Brock his win back, essentially, and still make Oba look strong. I just didn't need F5, 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 kick out. Okay, F5 on the table. All right, that didn't work. All right, now more of it's like, it felt like Brock had 3 moves, and that was it.
It's Brock Lesnar. I mean, if it's not F5, it's Suplex City. Come on.
I mean, he could have thrown a couple in there, too, though.
I get that. But here's the problem when I look at this. I know that he's the monster. I know that he has the big power moves. Paul Heyman even referenced this when he was talking about, like, post-show, where he's like, you know, Brock has conquered everything. You know, when he first came in, he'd conquered Dwayne when they said he couldn't. He did, you know, he conquered Taker. in college, he conquered everybody. Before that, he conquered everybody. And it's just like, yes, we've heard about this great amateur background. I would have loved to see Brock pull out some of those moves here to really try to put one over on Oba, where it's not reliant on the F5. Let him show some of that amateur background and taking down the kid. Have him realize, like, maybe trying to rush in and hit these three moves is what got me in trouble. That's just me, though.
And, well, let's not forget that Oba was also in the Kimura lock for quite a while before he got himself out of it.
I absolutely get that as well. And, I think it was smart to do that because it took away the choke slam.
Yeah, well, that's the psychology of that match right there. It's that's the ring psychology of that story. He weakened his left arm, or his right, whatever, his right arm, buggered everything up, and, you know, he basically salted his opponent. I said salted, not assaulted. Difference. And, yeah, I get your complaint. I understand it, but at the same time, for this match, it worked.
I think for just because of the fact of how they wanted this to go, I think they did a good job of putting it together. While I didn't necessarily want this outcome, I am more okay with it after this match than I expected to. Because the nice, like, yes, he hit like a bazillion F5s to finally take him down, but it also wasn't like seven F5s in a row, a pin, and then he walked away. They sort of made a little bit of a match out of it so that you could see, you kind of gave Obafemi a chance to kind of like get up from stuff. You know, he took those three F5s and he kicked out not just before three, but right after two. He got put through a table and at around six, he was up right away. It wasn't, I was sitting there with the count and Brock sitting in the corner. I'm like, are they going to do the whole thing where he like gets in the ring at like 9.5 just barely? Because that is such a common thing nowadays. Everybody waits to the last second. The fact that he just like got up and I was like, no. And he kind of walked in. That was kind of nice. It was a nice little change, and I'm glad that they didn't like draw it out with him. They made him be like, yeah, I got put through the table, but that still didn't do anything. So like they did kind of keep him stronger than I expected them to. It's going to give him a little bit of he like won't completely lose his momentum, in my opinion.
It maintains his cred.
Yeah, I don't think, even for the people who maybe think that he has lost it, I don't think it's going to take him too long to get it back. I think they could very easily be like, yes, Brock beat Obafemi, but now Obafemi is going to go on a spree of just dummying anybody he can get his hands on until they go for that rubber match, probably at SummerSlam, to the point where maybe he goes after Paul Heyman physically. But I think he's going to beat up a whole lot of people in frustration first.
So, well, it's funny you mentioned that, Cage.
Yeah, Brent. I was going to go to this.
Okay.
So, Cage, Brent's going to tell you about the King of the Ring tournament.
Oh.
So Casey, on the post show, they spent time talking about the fact that, you know, what happened with Brock Lesnar and Obafemi. Tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw, on the men's bracket of the King of the Ring tournament, there is a four-way match qualifier or to move you to the semifinals.
Obafemi against everybody else.
It is where it's Penta, Obafemi, Solo Sikoa, and Carmelo Hayes in a four-way match.
Yeah.
And they expressly were talking about tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw in this same arena, Obafemi is in action. So.
Yeah, he's going to be in action, all right.
And the winner of this match earns a title shot the winner of the King of the Ring tournament earns a title shot at SummerSlam. So, yeah. they may already have plans for him. Also, I was talking to Brock about this before the show. Brock, you sweet summer child. After the match, he's looking at Obafemi, and I think he's trying to say 1-1, you know, letting you know we each have a win. Brock instead said, hey, Oba, 1+1. I don't know if he was trying to give him a sudden math test or what, but... Like, yes, Brock, 1+1. There have been two matches. What about it? Brock was never the tactician. I think we all can agree that.
Yep.
So there's
never the what?
Tactician.
He was never the most mentally acute person, hence Paul Heyman.
So Brock beats Oba. There'll be a rematch, maybe. We'll find that out at some point.
Maybe that's Brock's retirement match in Minnesota.
That
maybe
should be. If you're going to the three-match route, then that's the way it should be.
Then Brock may have a say in this King of the Ring tournament then, because otherwise Oba may be busy at SummerSlam.
Guess we'll wait and see. It was the Intercontinental Championship on the line. Becky Lynch defending against Sol Ruka.
This one was good. I think some of the fancier moves that Sol Ruka tries, maybe she wants to dial them back a little bit.
You thinking they're too much?
No, I think that her like success rate of hitting them
is below where it should be.
It's that is the problem with doing, you know, certain moves that are like fancy and sometimes a little too fancy is you do run the risk of them not being properly executed all the time. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a bad thing. I respect the fact that she's trying these things and like trying to innovate and come up with like a style, but it's hard to justify some of them when they're not always like the cleanest hits. And then it doesn't, I don't know. I think it takes away from it a little bit. I think there are other things that she could do to kind of get the same point across, and you won't have a lot of people on the internet talking trash.
It kind of put Becky in the position of having to work twice as hard to sell the move.
If you're going to have anybody do it, Becky's a great opponent. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think if it was against someone else, it might be harder. That still being said, overall, the match was really good.
Before you go, Brent, what will help her is the return of the WWE live event tour this summer, where you're working more than once every 3 weeks, so you can time those moves better and have more in-ring opportunities to perfect them and get the timing down so that when you're wrestling on the big stages, you can hit them more effectively.
And not just timing down on her side, but also on the side of the opponents, that all these new opponents that she's wrestling that aren't used to doing the moves with her like they were back down in NXT.
Right, because you don't have the PC to work on them. You got to now work on them on the road, and when you're not working on the road every day or even every week, it kind of slows down your progress.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brent.
Well, Sol was definitely giving off young Lita vibes tonight. Or today.
Yeah.
With a lot of what she was doing. And with her look as well.
Yeah, kind of piggybacking on what Casey was saying, because I was talking to Rock about this last night. I know that there's been talk about the fact of, like, some on the internet have said, like, maybe she needs a new finisher, because the Soul Snatcher, legitimately, is a fantastic-looking move. However, it does require, like, great athletic ability on her part to hit that back, you know, that backflip essentially into the move, but it also requires your opponent to be in the precise location to be able to take and sell it well. I think in NXT, like Rock was talking about, if you're at the PC and you can work all week with someone to be like, okay, so we're gonna try that, boo, like she can hit a fantastic version like she did with Kalani Jordan down there and be like, ooh, that looks amazing. But if all you have is, you know, like 2 hours before door opens at the arena and you're trying to be like, okay, so Becky, this is how it's kind of done. I need you roughly in this spot. And it's like, Becky's going, okay.
Yeah. There are definitely some women on that roster that you do not want to be taking that move.
And I mean, it's the same thing with Javon Evans in a way. Like, he's bouncy. We get that. But a lot of what he does is reliant on both him hitting his part and his opponent being at the precise place that they need to be for this. And we saw that, a good example of that, when he was wrestling Randy Orton down in NXT, and he tried that cutter, and Orton was supposed to hit the RKO, and it didn't turn out well, and then Orton had to like, all right, well, we're just going to hit the regular RKO, boom! And he's telling him after the match, like, in the ring, like, it's okay. You did all right. It's not all going to go well. It's one of those things where, like, the moves of some of these new people, yes, they're really flashy. Yes, they look really cool. But there is a lot of moving parts that you need to align very, very well together in order to pull them off. And as you alluded to, the fact that you only get maybe one shot a week to do some of these things doesn't necessarily help that. Whereas going on this European tour may help illustrate that maybe some house shows aren't so bad. There are some downsides, as we may talk about in the main event, but having some of these house shows can also help get people a little bit more exposure, as well as, you know, having a bunch of different areas such as NXT and AAA that help get people some work if they need to be able to get reps in.
Mm-hmm.
Sol Ruggiero is your new women's intercontinental champion. All right,
hopefully
you're
Becky can move on to something else now.
Maybe winning Queen of the White Ring.
Maybe.
All right, main event. Tribal Combat for the World Heavyweight Championship. Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu.
I was happy once the match got back to the ring. not to take away from anything that they did, like, around the arena and stuff like that. It's just one of those things where, like, okay, this is where the whole quote-unquote tribal combat stuff comes in, so they can do something a little different, move around the arena and stuff. But it was really, for me, and whether, you know, this is just my opinion, I'm not saying it's right or not, I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed the stuff they did in the ring a lot more than outside, and probably because there was more of, like, a story with what they were doing in the ring, whereas outside they were just beating the crap out of each other as much as possible.
Some of that may have had something to do with what we just talked about, certain house show stuff.
Yeah.
This is a good way of, like, protecting someone a little bit if they're perhaps not 100%.
Mm-hmm. I am going to give props to that ring step to the noggin when Roman tossed it from the ring onto Jacob from the outside. That looks so rough.
Not a spot you normally, like, you might see someone, like, do the running stair spot to someone. And, you know, you can protect well against that. Put your hand up, yeah. Be able to. But yeah, when it's a heavy piece of steel that's being thrown outside of the ring at you, I mean, good on Jacob for taking that, but you see that as a fan and you just kind of go, oh God, why?
Well, I think it's one of those things where they're probably trying to be like, well, Jacob Fatu, he's this guy who's got, you know, those Samoan heads are like hard as rocks and you got to do quite a bit. You like DDT some of these guys and they just get up right away. Well, if you really want to go toe to toe with a Samoan head, ring steps seem like a pretty good way to do it. And no. like you were saying, like, you see people like run it into them, and every once in a while you'll see people like throw it from the ring to the outside, but to my recollection, and I could be wrong, pretty much everyone else who gets stairs thrown at them from the inside to the outside of the ring usually duck out of the way.
See, you bring up the Samoan head. Is it wrong that part of me wanted Jacob to take that move and then do his kind of like Samoan Hulk up, because I just want to see Roman be like, look, I tried, okay? Like, yeah. Jesus, what does it take?
I mean, I wouldn't have been mad if they did, but, like, also, I also like the idea of, like, well, I mean, they may be, like, really tough guys, but steel steps knock down just about everybody.
Yeah. I will say, Roman's winning purse, I think, is deducted about, what, $10 or $15 from total, throwing the snacks into the fan or into the crowd. I mean, good job by Face Roman, but I think he kind of had that deducted a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at the end of the day, I'm still not sure where they're going with this story. I hope that it's not just like a repeat of the old Bloodline, and maybe they're kind of doing a thing of like, it would be really nice if now that Jacob has lost to Roman, maybe it's like Roman doing more of like taking him under his wing and showing him what it really takes to be the tribal chief and all of the like responsibilities outside of the ring and not so much about the power. That'd be nice. But I guess we'll see. It's really hard to tell because the waters are so muddy with, like, is he bad? Is he good? Is Jacob bad? Is Jacob good? Then we see Solo and his crew at the end of the match, and we go, well, what's up with that?
I think they touched on that a little bit in the interview after the event, where he was interviewed at the entranceway. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
So, I can't remember who the interviewer was, but they stopped Roman, and they were asking him about what's going on, and he basically had said, like, essentially, like, I'm trying to do this the right way. I'm trying to, you know, like, I've done this for a while, but it's like he kind of recognizes that the first run, he was kind of a dick. And the whole time he's talking, Jacob is kind of just sitting there in the back listening, because it's like it's the four of them. It's Roman, the Usos, and Jacob, and you see Jacob there. And I think Roman may try to do a little bit of what you're talking about. Like, you need to fall in line, but here, let me take you under the wing. I think the catalyst in this storyline is going to be more Jay, from what I've seen. Because Jay's the one who is really kind of like, you need to fall in line. And I think maybe this is going to be one of those things where, like, Roman is going to try and teach Jacob, and Jay is going to probably push the issue more. And I think the issue will come about, like, you put me through hell, and now you're kind of like, just, you're coddling him. You're taking it, you know, and Roman's probably going to be like, what I did before was wrong. I recognize that. And I think it's going to come more into, like, Jacob versus Jay. At least from what I see and gather. I could be wrong.
Jealous Jay.
Jealous, or like, no, it needs to be hard love. It needs to be tough love for this. And it's just like, no, I did that, and look what happened to you. Look what you turned into. That's not good. I recognize this. Because as we've learned, we had the same kind of motivation with Jay initially with the bloodline and his participation in it, of like, I need to take care of my family. So he kind of acquiesced to that. Jacob's been alluding to that same kind of thing. And I don't think they're going to go in that same direction of like the beatdown version of Jacob Fatu, because I don't think that really gets you anywhere. In fact, I think that really weakens him. But I mean, this is still really kind of early. So we may need to like play it out and see where it goes. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, we don't know how he's going to, quote-unquote, enslave him, as Lance mentioned. You don't know what he's going to teach him. You don't know how it's going to come across on television, because we haven't seen it. This just all feels like a rehash of the past Bloodline storylines. We have to wait for it to play out before we can judge it, because we don't know. The one thing Brent didn't mention was Roman was about talking about this time around. It's about putting a shine on his legacy. We'll see how that affects everything going forward. It's a wait and see. You brought up LeMann Solo and the MFT as babyface. Again, they're going to be the heels. They're going to be ones trying to get, I would assume, getting in Jacob's ear.
Well, also the fact that the MFTs are only three people now.
Right, so Jacob is technically going to be the one in the middle, because he doesn't really want to be under the tutelage of Roman.
But he knows how much Solo sucks.
Right, so he's like, he's in the middle. So, I don't know.
Is it the devil you know or the devil you don't? We're going to figure this out.
Because he has loyalty somewhat to Solo. Not much anymore, but some, because again, Solo brought him in. So, I don't know, I would wait. Before we judge the whole story, let's watch it happen. Novel content.
Yeah, I'm not trying to pass judgment.
I'm talking just in general, like, just let's.
Oh, yeah.
Let's watch the TV develop before. Okay, this is the old Bloodline. All right, cool. Then we could talk about it and have a conversation of, well, they could have done something different, because they haven't fully leaned back into Bloodline roots. They're connected, but they're not full. There's a lot of blurring of the line. We have to see how they play out. That's my best advice.
I will say, though, the one thing that's nice about this is we can officially say Jacob Fatu, an eventer. They are doing stuff to try and like bring people up, you know, get some new blood into the overall picture.
Yeah.
And with Roman not working Night of Champions, you have time to build whoever his next challenger may be.
Yeah. Did they say who King of the Ring will face? I can't remember if it was just a championship match at WrestleMania.
It's SummerSlam. I believe it's the champion of your, I believe, like, it has been, it's been the champion of your brand.
Okay.
Unless they've changed it to you could choose any brand. It usually was the champion of your brand.
By the way, again, Rock, when did Finn Balor officially move over to SmackDown?
He's on SmackDown?
According to the graphic, Finn Balor is in a blue color. So, if you look at the graphic for the men's King of the Ring, it's Jey Uso, LA Knight, Royce Keyes, and Finn Balor.
Huh.
I will say, if we do get the semifinal matchup of Obafemi and Braun Breaker, Keishi gets to do the announcement for that entire match. Because those two will beat the high holy hell out of each other.
Yep.
He's currently listed as a Raw superstar, so...
Potential spoiler alert.
There's also the interesting portion of they announced the female lineup for the women's Queen of the Ring, who gets a title shot at, or who gets a championship match at SummerSlam, and the first person announced for it in the bracket, Liv Morgan. What? I told Rock, so we're going to see Stephanie tomorrow, probably.
So her reasoning is that she wants to just win it all, everything. Everyone's I mean, she doesn't
I guess if you win Queen of the Ring and you're the champion, you don't have to wrestle?
It's either that or...
It's a similar concept to when they put when Brock Lesnar entered the Royal Rumble as champion.
Yeah.
It could be that. It could be the fact of, as Rock was alluding to, and maybe the mindset is, Liv wins... Then she gets the match with Rhea, because technically that would be a championship match, and she could be champ, plus, you know, get the chance at Rhea. But I think this all just means that we get a certain La Prima coming back and costing her, because as we both realized, four-way matches are essentially no disqualification. So if someone does appear in the match and either takes you out or... You sprawled to the back. It has no bearing on the finish. So we shall see with that. Liv gets to take on Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, and Chelsea Green.
So, and also think she's the only, I guess they didn't put Ivy Nile in this, right? No.
No.
They didn't put Maxine.
Nope.
Everyone else, they've covered all the females on Raw. So it may have been a numbers issue there as well.
True.
And they're creating the storyline. She just wants everything. But there was a little bit of a numbers issue.
By the way, Internet, if you look at this tournament, it is pretty stacked. Yet all I see is, oh my God, they have such a big roster, yet so-and-so isn't included. I hate to say this. I don't think Maxine Dupri not being in the Queen of the Ring tournament quite legitimizes any gripe you have.
Don't be stands for Maxine Dupri when you haven't cared about her matches with Natty for the last few months. Just want to point that one out.
Oh, Rock, they have big plans for Maxine.
Also, Natty's missing from this as well.
Well, Natty's down in NXT.
She's working NXT. Yeah, she's working NXT right now. So she's not going to be overseas, and that's where all this is taking place.
That's what I was going to say. This is taking place over the next 3 weeks. So if you're not working the European tour, you're not really in the Queen of the Ring tournament. So
there you go. All right. So that was Clash in Italy. Brent.
Oh, housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
All right, so we had 11 people participate in our pick'em contest. Well, 11 sets of picks, not people. Because in 11th place, going 1-4, is our oh-so-trusty magical Wheel of Fun. The wheel's doing pretty well in fantasy right now, let me just say. But the wheel's in 4th place, ahead of Lindsay and, I believe, someone on this call.
All right, so let's go. Give us a...
All right. Tied for 6th place, going 2-3, so just under 500, we have the 8-Ball, Keishi, Sarah, Subway, and Tim Stein.
Oh, yeah.
Tied for 4th place, going 3-2, so above 500, is myself and the Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. And then tied for 1st place in 4-1, so no one got a perfect score this time around, Lindsay Rock and Tommy C.
Nice.
The last time I played the long odds.
You know, it happens. There's not a lot of room for error when there's the 5-match card.
So there this you go. True. So that's our show for another Sunday night here for Russell Talk Radio. As a programming note, there is no post-show of Raw. We're a few weeks, as well as we're talking about in chat, they're overseas for majority of June. So.
Oh, you can't do a post-show at like 2 o'clock p.m.?
We're not doing a show at 5 p.m. That's not happening. But we'll be live Thursday for the Rack, 10 p.m. Eastern, to talk about Clash in Italy. Saturday night in the CB Radio, 11:30 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do maybe the Spelling Bee if our hosts show up. We'll figure it out. Saturday's 11:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back next Sunday for another edition of WTR, Sunday Russell Talk Radio, at 10 p.m. Eastern. Is that Wild Talk Radio? It's facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network. Get that WTR. Sunday night, Tim.
That would be me telling you to follow me on X, because that's where I am. I post multiple times a day, and 95% of what I post is interesting.
Sure. Yeah, everything he posts, Chad, is interesting.
I said 95%. There's 5% that you won't find interesting because it's niche.
Casey would be the one to judge that, right?
Yep. You can find social media presence on various platforms at Kyle Driver. I post multiple times a lifetime. whether those posts include anything in the next rest of my life, we will see.
Brent.
Yeah, you can find me on a variety of social media at either Kane Kittens or Kane Die Kittens. That'll be X/Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter. You can also find me and Rock sometimes talking wrestling, apparently, on CB Radio when we're not doing games or spelling bees or waiting for a co-host that may have fallen asleep. We may have a spelling bee next week. Who knows? Maybe we'll be talking about what happened on AAA again. Maybe CB Radio becomes the AAA recap show. We'll find out.
It is not going to become the AAA recap show. That is for sure. Anyway, chat, if you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's not Prime Gaming, it's not Twitch Prime, it's just Prime. Click the purple button below the screen. You can use creator code ROCKETSOCK in the Fortnite shop when you buy your brand new Paddle Passes this Saturday. Because hashtag epic partner. That's all I got, Tim.
That's it for tonight, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the review. Hope you enjoyed Clash at the Castle earlier today. We're going to be back next Sunday night. Once we think up what we're going to talk about, stuff like that. So join us. Until then, stay warm and dry because we can't keep where we are, but have a great week.
WildTalkRadio.com.